We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Gonna pop in here for a couple minutes. I can say hello to you, Mr. Wonstadt.
Dave Wonstadt.
Shane, wake up.
NFL head coach for 11 years.
The Bears came in here, and Dave Wonstadt. There's a happy group of overachievers that have been well coached.
College football national champion.
Dave Wonstadt, one of my, really idols.
Super Bowl champion.
I'm a good friend with Wonstadt as well. And what's his drink of choice, by the way?
Usually a Manhattan.
Bourbon.
Or Terry Bradshaw bourbon.
Yeah, exactly.
Bourbon. All right, good. I'm an old-fashioned guy myself.
Football analyst for NBC Sports Chicago.
You'll see that on Netflix. I'm going over to Miami Wednesday. Netflix is coming in here. They're doing a big thing on the comeback of the Dallas Cowboys. So the Inner Circle, we're doing it. We're heading down to the Keys. Jan's coming with me, and we're going to meet Jimmy at the Big Chill. That's his restaurant down there, and our attorney will be there, probably Nick Christian. And in their mind, it's going to rival the Michael Jordan. I mean, that's the effort that they're putting into it. The Last Dance. I'm looking forward to it.
Really? Oh, so that's how you're going to play it. You going to do this? Okay, fine. That's all I needed. That's all I needed for him to do that. And it became personal with me.
Form is something tall and strong. Make it a hurricane before I go insane. It's only 12:30, but I don't care.
He don't care.
I don't care. It's 5:00 somewhere.
How are you, Dave?
I'm great. I'll tell you, Tanny, nice job. You keep putting another level, another layer on top of that little intro. Good. Very good. Now you got the Netflix angle going. Perfect.
It's kind of like you, Coach. You keep putting on extra levels and layers of your life, Just keep adding skills and experiences.
Hey, we got to make this announcement right now. Shane, I got a job for you other than what you do.
What?
At the studio. I had a long talk with Terry Bradshaw. The bourbon, he's out of the bourbon business.
No way.
Oh, no.
It's a long story. It'd be a good chapter for the book. Uh-huh. We can't get into it now, but we need somebody, one of our listeners, to step up, and we'll give them a little publicity, but they need to step up, and we need to contribute a little bourbon here. And Shane, you can give them the one to send it down there. And
all right, whichever listener is going to do this, headlines here, you just have to do exactly what Terry did. So we need two beers. So we can make that happen.
Wait, so what's the job? You're asking Shane to get into the business of bourbon procurement for our sessions and segments here?
Absolutely.
Oh, he can do that.
Yeah, we can do better than Terry.
He knows people. Go to the restaurant you went to over in that one area where we went.
Mm. Yeah.
I wonder if I'll go to Rosemary and just say, Dave needs bottles of bourbon. Let me have that.
Does Joe Namath have a bourbon? I mean, let's just go, old quarterback bourbon for $500, Alex.
You know what? Charles Woodson does. Maybe I'll get a hold of Charles and see if he'll send up a little.
He's got a good wine. Okay. Intercept is Charles Woodson's wine. It's delicious, actually.
Yeah, it's not bad. Yeah, it is. It's good. It's good.
I'm going to just Google celebrity bourbons, and we'll start naming people until do you know Jamie Foxx?
We got to work on that. We got to work on that. Okay, that's a task for the next month.
All right, Dave, I'm going to just name people who have celebrity bourbons, and you tell us if you know them. Do you know Jamie Foxx?
No.
Do you know Drake?
No.
Do you know Jason Aldean?
No, I don't. No, you're
all right, Charles Woodson. Charles Woodson it is.
There you go.
It's good to have fun with names.
I agree, Pat.
The next three he knows, Charles Woodson, Scottie Pippen, and Terry Bradshaw.
Oh, yeah.
Scottie has some?
Yeah,
Scottie
has some.
I could definitely reach out to Scottie. He was in my box enough when I was a Dolphins coach. He was down there with his guys and I got to know Scotty down there in Miami.
Hey,
he was living on his boat or down in Miami or something. So
We'll get to the Bears, but like, how did it go? And the Keys, did you meet with the Netflix people? Did they interview you guys about the Cowboys run? Who was all down there getting interviewed, Coach?
Well, this run, it was just Jimmy and myself. Jimmy went, I think he told me he went 5 hours. I went 4 hours straight. I'm wow. talking about only stand up and drink a bottle of water and sit back down and here we go. And, but they've talked to Kenny Norton and they've talked to Emmett. They did 3 days worth of Jerry. What I'm told, they were flying back to Dallas and they were going to do Troy and Michael. They did Charles Haley. I don't have the final list. So they're, and then the time they do all the editing and what gets thrown out. They're flying today and you're going to do Mr. Murdoch and they're going to do Ooh. Phil Knight.
Wow.
Sure.
Yeah.
How could you do a documentary without Mr. Murdoch and Phil Knight? did you talk to Jerry at all?
No. I was you guys saw the picture. I was just with Jimmy. We walked into the Big Chill, okay, his restaurant. And he said, bring us an order of nachos that covers the table, and I want them stacked this high. Yeah, it was Shane, oh, talk about Mexican food now, guys. And then we had dinner. And then he took them out. He said, give me a half. I want a key lime pie, a half to go. And the girl comes up and says, you mean a half of a slice? He says, no. I want a half of a key lime pie in the car to go home. Oh, it was beautiful.
It sounds lovely.
Oh, my God. An order of nachos as big as the table. This is the stuff that gets Coach going right here.
And then stack them this high, he said, stack them.
Did you get the sense that you guys were going to be able to speak honestly about the fallout between Jimmy and Jerry?
Well, we did, but what comes on in it, that's
right.
We don't know what
they're going to release, but you feel like you answered honestly.
Yeah. And I asked Jimmy, I said, how deep do we want to go on this thing? What do you think? And he said, let's go deep, So we talked about a lot. We talked about the Herschel Walker trade and half the stuff that you guys know. And then we get into some other things that I won't get into now you'll have to watch the special and see it.
It is one of the great chapters in professional sports history is what happened there with Jimmy and Jerry and you and all of that. And it's good if you guys were honest. For anybody who doesn't know, it's part of the brokered piece for Jerry and Jimmy that led to Jimmy's Jimmy getting into the Ring of Honor there in Dallas, this special. So I hope you guys are all honest, including Jerry.
And, one of the last questions that they asked me, they said, hey, do you really think that this is going to be people are going to have interest in this? And I said, let me tell you something. When I was driving here this morning, I was listening to the NFL Network, and they were talking about the Robert Kraft, Bill Belichick, Robert Kraft calling the owner Arthur Blank in Atlanta, saying he didn't trust Belichick. He wouldn't hire him. Bill not getting a job. And I said, the host, the guy that was doing the show, I don't even know who it was. He says, well, this is head coach and owner after the fact, a lot like the Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones thing. So I said, I don't know. This morning I'm driving in and they're still referencing Jerry and Jimmy. So I said, I think people will have an interest in it.
Yeah, I think that makes a heck of a lot of sense. It sounds like it was a good time, and we'll.
And then this morning I was at Miami's practice. I was over there at 7 a.m. at the U. Jan and I, we stayed at the Biltmore in Coral Gables, legendary hotel, 5-star hotel. And then we this morning I got up early. I called Mario Cristobal. Jason Taylor's his defensive line coach.
Wow.
I drove down to the U. Got in there with those guys. I was meeting with them at 7:15 this morning. And then left there, went up, met with our attorney, Nick Christian, at 9:30, because we lost so many papers, legal stuff in the hurricane. And so we had to re-sign everything. So, yeah, we had a full day. Then back over to Naples from Miami. So here we go.
What is
Shane?
Jimmy?
When I
go ahead.
When I told Shane if I'm available, I meant if I'm available because I did not know. It's been a long 2 days.
Yeah, it sounds like it. We're excited to work with you next Thursday when we're in Detroit, and you and Pat Manley are going to be back here for the draft. What does Jimmy Johnson think the Bears should do other than Caleb Williams? Or does he not think Caleb Williams? What does he think?
He doesn't care.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay,
he doesn't know.
Yeah.
He doesn't know and he doesn't care.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That's the simplest way I could sum it
that's
up.
That's the best. That's the best.
Jimmy was talking about, I think Jan said, what time are you getting out on the Jan said, what time are you getting out in the morning on the water? And he said, before the sun comes up. So he's still in his routine, up on the boat, out on the water, lines in the, throw the fishing lines in, sun comes up. And now I think Jan said, well, you doing that every day? He says, well, I think he said 5 beers. Once I finish my 5th Heineken, whether it's 9:30, 10, 11 o'clock, then it's time to come in.
Hey, coach.
Good rule.
Yeah, right. It's an outstanding rule.
That's a good rule.
Yeah, you get out there before the sun comes up.
Start at 5:30 or 6.
Yeah. Tell your time of day based on beers consumed.
I'll be back after 9 beers, babe.
Oh, he's the best. Yeah. He's beautiful.
Yeah, he's played it well. This life thing. He's done good with that. Hey, coach. What do you think about the Bears really only doing the deep dive quarterback visit with Caleb? And not any other quarterbacks. Lewis Riddick was tweeting about it earlier today, saying that he was talking to somebody else, a personnel man around the league. It was like, why aren't the Bears looking into other quarterbacks? If you had the number one pick, is it okay to lock in on your guy and only focus on Caleb?
Well, I guarantee you they've done their homework on Jalen Daniels, on J.J. McCarthy, on Drake May. They've done their homework on all of them. They've got probably folders on everyone. And they know, okay, let's say Caleb is the guy. But yeah, things could happen. God forbid the guy gets sick. I mean, that. Why do you think that we would never really make a trade before we were on the clock and talking to the player because we wanted to make sure that he was healthy and nothing happened crazy the night before the draft. I mean, you don't know what's going to happen. So the Bears definitely have a plan that if something crazy happened with Caleb, who would they take? So they got a plan. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
But they're pretty confident that things are going to work out. So that's why they're sitting there. That's why they haven't done anything else with anybody.
What are you hearing? You always start talking to people. What do you think you know ahead of the draft?
I think that here's the question that's worth debatable. How much are the Vikings going to overpay to move into the top four or top three? I'm forget about Caleb, to get the second pick, Washington, to get the third pick, New England. How the Giants, the fourth pick, how much are they willing to pay? They got the 11th pick and the 23rd pick, and they're going to overpay. I can tell you right now. Do they think that Sam Darnold, we know that he has failed at a couple of different places. Are they willing to say, we're not going to overpay crazy? Or are they willing to give those 2 first-round picks plus something else to move from 11 up to 3, 11 up to 2? Because that's probably what it's going to cost them. So that's one of the stories that I'm kind of – I can't wait to see the decision – If they do that, who are they going to take? I don't know. I mean, I talk to coaches. I do know. I mean, I talk to coaches at the Vikings, and they love Drake May. They're talking about J.J. McCarthy. So I think they're kind of focused on that third or fourth pick as far as what they would be willing to give up in a trade, not the second pick.
Coach,
that's what I can tell you.
You think if the Bears, if we get to 9, are there many teams that are going to want to trade up with the Bears? We've been talking about this scenario for a long time, but I don't know who would be worth trading up for when you're sitting there at 9.
Well, you know, the team who needs quarterbacks. I mean, the team that doesn't have a quarterback, obviously Denver does not have a quarterback, right? We know that. I mean, who doesn't really believe in their quarterbacks might be a better question, that might be willing to move up one, two, three spots to get into nine and for the Bears to move back. And if the Bears are sitting there at that point and they're saying, okay, we're going to take a receiver. We could take Polk from Washington if we want to get a Debo Samuels. That's what he is. He can do everything. If you want the best third down receiver in the draft, I think it's McConkey, the kid out of Georgia. If they want a guy in the red zone that catches everything, you take Coleman out of Washington State. So, you know, and then you get into the pass rushers. If you want the complete player, you take Burse. If you want probably the best pass rusher in the whole draft, you take Latu, the guy from UCLA, but he failed a physical. So they got to be sitting there looking through this and saying, you know, we could take one of two of these guys. We could take Burse or Latu if we move down three or four picks. Then I think the Bears trade out of it and pick up an extra player and pick up an extra pick. That's the way I would look at it. Unless they are all in and 100% sold on this player at this position, then I would move down for sure, because people are going to be trying to get up there. And once those first four quarterbacks go, let's assume they're gone in the first four or five picks. Now you're looking at Penix, you're looking at Bo Nix, and those guys are good players. And there's teams that don't have a quarterback that would want those guys. The Raiders would love to have one of those guys. As I said, Denver would love to have one of those guys. Now, are you going to make a deal to let them jump up to nine, get their quarterback, and you move down a few spots? That's how they got to look at it.
Hey, Coach, I read something the other day about a study that had taken place studying every draft pick between 88 and 2004, and it still gets referenced these days, about how the right thing to do is to trade down. That teams massively overestimate their ability to tell stars from flops, and that human dynamics come into play and people get egotistical in the draft, and that if you trade down and get another pick either in the draft or in next year's draft, historically it has proven to be much more valuable than actually just taking your guy. So
let's go back to the Vikings. I mean, that's a great point, Spiggs. Let's go to the Vikings and say that they sit at 11 and they know they're going to get they don't know anything, but let's just say that they believe they're going to get Bo Nix or they're going to get Penix at 11 and keep their pick, or maybe move down a little bit. You know, I mean, I agree with you. They could definitely still. The thing that's really shocking, think about this. I don't know if I would have done this. I mean, you look at Washington, they get rid of their starting quarterback. The Patriots get rid of their starting quarterback. The Vikings get rid of their starting quarterback. So these guys are desperate for a quarterback, and they're kind of boxed in there. They're kind of put in a corner, and I think they're all going to overpay. Unless they take somebody where they're at, they could overpay to try to get the guy that they really think is the difference maker. And as you just said, there's no statistics to prove that, hey, this guy is definitely going to be the home run.
Have you seen egos be a problem in the draft room, Coach?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I have. And, the big debate in the draft room, and let me tell you what's going on, okay? The scouts have worked their tails off on these players since these guys entered college, maybe before that. So they're big on best player available. So you got one board that's nothing from one, whoever it is. Let's just say, for example, to put a little buzzkill on these quarterbacks, let's say that everybody thought that Marvin Harrison Jr. was the best player in this draft, for example. So he's one, and then you go from there down to 500. And then on the other board, you got best player by position. The teams that are starting from scratch, you definitely better go by best player available. The teams that think they're close or the coaches are close to getting fired, or the GMs that are close to getting fired, they're looking at this thing by what best player is available. Or it doesn't have to be, let me back up. The teams and the coaches that think they're closest to making the next step. We were there in Dallas. When we drafted Russell Maryland with the first pick, was he the best player in the draft? Absolutely not. But we made a decision that we needed a defensive tackle. He was the highest rated defensive tackle. We knew him on and on and on. I don't care what anybody says about numbers. We're taking this guy. He can help us win. And so I think that's what's going on in the draft rooms. And I think the Bears fall into that second category where they are close. In my mind, they are close to winning. They're going to get their quarterback and now get a player that can help you win this year and get into the playoffs and not just save jobs, but take the next step to getting to the ultimate goal.
Would you draft a punter in the fourth round?
I have. Why not?
Yeah, that does not surprise me. Would you draft a punter in the third round?
Why not? I have.
Second round?
Probably not.
All right.
Where'd you draft a punter in the third and the fourth? Back-to-back years in Miami? What are we talking about here?
Oh, you guys, we're sick. Why can't we stay, keep talking quarterbacks or positions? Other?
I agree.
Let me tell you something. Todd Sauerbrunn, you guys ever hear of Reggie Roby?
Yes.
Any idea who he is?
Oh, brilliant punter for the Dolphins with crazy hang time, huge leg, a god among punters.
Where did he go to college? He went to Iowa, okay?
Okay.
And Reggie Roby, Todd Sauerbrunn, broke every record of Reggie Roby's in college. The Todd Sauerbrunn punted. He kicked field goals. He kicked off. I was down at the Senior Bowl myself and watched this guy kick. And all I was thinking is, we're going to run the ball, play defense, and punt the ball, and the opponent's going to take over the football inside the 20 every time. Even though a lot of the fans in Chicago don't want to believe it, there was some real thinking and logic to that pick. Okay.
Okay. Dave, you are the absolute best. When do you get to Chicago?
Oh, I told Shane I'd be around on Monday, but I'll be there before that.
Do you want us to not bother you before Monday? Noted.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But I'll be on Mullion Hall Tuesday, and then I guess I'll be with you guys on Thursday. I got some Big Ten stuff. I got a lot of action this next week.
It's awesome.
All right, Coach. Well, we'll talk to you next week, and you'll be a part of our show Thursday night.
Throughout the draft. Me and Pat Manning, we can rehash some old times. I think I got to get Tony Wise to call in and say how much he hated Pat Manley as an offensive lineman. I think that would be, if we have some dead time, that would be worth a call.
Okay. Sounds good.
Tony was gonna come, but he, you know, yesterday he told me, I don't know, I got to go, you know, visit Rutgers or something. I don't know.
Whatever he's got to do.
Yeah, he was busy.
Yeah.
He was doing something.
He was doing something, which really, you don't, when you're kind of come to Chicago and you get a chance to go to Tofano's and you got a chance to come to the Score and see Mitchie and all the guys.
Yep.
You're not doing anything.
Hey, he'll regret that trip to Rutgers. He will regret that. It's a guarantee.
Everybody does. All right. See you, Dave. We'll talk next week.
All right. Didn't mean to bother you.
All right. No problem. There it is. Guy's got excellent comedic timing.
He's the best.
It's only improving.
Oh, leaning into a new bit. Yeah. We love that.
Yeah, it's only improving.
Hey, this is when we get news broken here. This is when we ask about, you know, Justin Fields and the Steelers and stuff when Wani's still hanging around in the Zoom, you know?
And now he's eating. Yeah. He waited until the hit was over, and now he's eating.
Hey, that's good. Good for
that's
him.
That's it. All right, guys. Didn't mean to bother you.
We just got word that the Cubs game has been postponed tonight. So no Cubs game tonight. Guys, there's going to be a doubleheader on a Saturday. I know.
Saturday
doubleheader. Oh, no. No.
Sorry, Shriff.
Game one. Saturday looks like a day-night doubleheader.
Missed out on the opportunity to be able to black out at the Cancer Kids thing tonight and then not come into work tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yeah, doubleheader would have meant full no-go.
Camp One Step. for the kids.
I think you could still make it happen. We'll be on 5 o'clock. You have time to recoup.
We got a short show.
It's
tomorrow.
A controversial charity endeavor. Blackout for the kids.
For the cancer kids.
Blackout for the cancer kids.
Hey man,
it does well. Does surprisingly well.
Still raising money.
You going hard tonight?
No, of course not. It's a Thursday.
Oh,
I'm an adult.
I'm sorry.
I'm 32 damn years old.
I didn't know you were an adult. That's what's new.
Breaking news on the score. It's brought to you by BetQL.
I don't know. Open bar, maybe. We'll see.
Yeah.
All right. That sounds good. Are they already regretting trading Michael Bush in L.A.? It's next on the score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
A source told the Parkinson Spiegel Show on 670 The Score. I know those guys.
Afternoons on The Score.
Presenting the cold, refreshing mountains of Bush. The mountain. Symbol of all the good natural ingredients that go into Bush. Symbol of all the good natural taste that pours out. Always smooth and natural and refreshing. Bush after Bush after Bush.
As Bush hits one up the middle, base hit to center. A run is in, stopping at second, Morrell. Michael Bush with his second hit of the day. A sharp single right through the middle. That ball almost hit the pitcher in the foot, and the Cubs now lead 5-2.
He's been the brightest of spots of this incredibly impressive start to the season for the resilient Chicago Cubs. Michael Bush, 6 home runs on the year. He's hitting .317, getting on base 40% of the time.
Did you see the walk on Tuesday night off a lefty before Happ's grand slam?
Yes. Yes,
and that was when he could have tried to swing for the fences for the 6th homer in 6 days, and instead he drew a walk against a lefty.
Yeah, he seems very calm when he's up there. Just professional at bats, sees pitches, knows the zone. OPS plus of 189.
Yeah,
that's pretty good.
That's monstrous.
And to the texters, yes, they have canceled tonight's game. It will be a day-night doubleheader on Saturday.
Ken Rosenthal wrote about Michael Bush today, and it was a character-based anecdote. To your point about like the calmness and like the character of the man, which now Council has talked about and others have talked about, the Rosenthal anecdote was about how he was supposed to be at a charity event, but then he got traded to the Cubs, and Jacob Stallings, who's a fellow North Carolina grad and ball player, said, You don't have to come to the charity event now. It's okay. You should go to Cubs convention, which is this weekend. You're going to be a big leaguer.
Yeah.
And he was like, I feel bad about that or whatever. Like, so, you know, people are breaking out their Michael Bush material because he's doing so well.
It's a great story. And it's the Cubs have needed him desperately. The offense has been good overall, obviously. But as other guys have struggled and slumped, he really has not. Mm-hmm. And it's very impressive. So it's the type of thing that, I don't know, it gives you confidence in the front office and scouting.
Mm-hmm.
This is a trade win for Jed Hoyer. I know he says it's too early to say that, but so far it feels like a trade win.
And let's see how Jackson Ferris pans out. That's the Jackson, right? There's Jackson Churio. There's Jackson Holiday. There's Jackson Merrill.
Jackson Ferris.
Yes.
He was 19 or whatever when they traded
but
him.
But this
right?
We are in the era of MLB Jacksons. It's everywhere.
It's a popular name.
It really is.
Yeah.
We'll see how that pans out. But it does look like a win. And right now there's a new guy that the Dodgers have. They just called up a outfielder named Andy Pages, which is my favorite traffic song, Andy Pages. But like, and people are like, I saw a Dodgers blog. Let's hope that what happened to Michael Bush doesn't happen to Andy Pages. So it's one thing for Dodgers fans and bloggers to be up in arms and saying, Michael Bush seems good. Why haven't we kept him? Why didn't we keep him? And there's been a fair amount of that. But I was talking to somebody last night who's very connected to the team and knows folks with the team. And there is some internal regret with the Dodgers about having maybe sold low on Michael Bush, or at least sold now on Michael Bush. And look, the Dodgers are fine. They've got a lot of really good hitters.
Yeah. They are fine.
Yeah, they're fine. But what's interesting is that...
But they're not perfect.
They're not perfect. And could they use Michael Bush? At what position? You know, when the Cubs traded for him, right around the time of the trade, Jed was quoted as saying, well, you know, from the Dodgers' perspective, when you got Hall of Famers at DH and first base and second base, it's easier to trade. And that was Mookie Betts at second and Freddie Freeman, and Shohei. But Mookie's been moved to short. At second base, they're playing Gavin Lux for the most part, who's been terrible offensively. Absolutely brutal. And I hadn't really realized it. Michael Bush played more games in the minors at second base than he did anywhere else.
That surprises me based on my long-held stance of not caring about minor league baseball and just watching these guys when they actually get to my team.
Yeah. Okay.
He doesn't really look like a middle infielder to me.
He played a lot of first in college at North Carolina, and then through the minors played very little first, like under 20 games at first base, played 240 games at second base. Now, maybe they're trying to work him out there and trying to get him good there.
Well, yeah, clearly.
But that's 200. That's a lot of games. So he could have played second base, and maybe he could still play second base somewhere along the way in his career. It doesn't look like the best, most natural first baseman as you watch him necessarily.
No, but that's kind of why I figured if he's not a very natural first baseman, how natural of a middle infielder could he be? Takes more range, takes more athleticism to play second than first.
Maybe a bat-first middle infielder, but certainly.
I'm just saying, if he played that much second, I would think that he would look better at first.
Different skill sets, right?
Well, I know, but a tougher defensive skill set.
Yeah, but different. Because remember, it's incredibly hard. Like, there are different hard things about first and the mindset of, at least he did play it in college and everything. But it's interesting to me that there is some regret within the Dodgers org, because I think the thought process has been, well, they got tons of guys like that. Because they do have a lot of guys like that. But
and the Jackson Ferris kid is a high ceiling. Like, if he hits, he's apparently a front of the rotation starting pitcher.
So, look, good baseball trade. But right now there are folks within the Dodgers who are like, man, we could have used him. He could be playing second base right now. Is Mookie's playing short? And we'll see what else happens, because not like Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez are lighting it up as
part
of their outfield mix.
They don't need six more home runs. They have enough home runs. They have enough stars. They don't need another big bat. Yeah. Cubs needed a big bat.
Well, the Cubs got one. The Cubs got one, and Michael Bush is getting a lot of play nationally and within Dodgers circles, folks talking about that he's good. And I think it's been interesting as we've had a chance to talk to both Nico and to Jed about what differentiates Michael Bush from, say, Matt Mervis. I didn't say Matt Mervis specifically when we asked the question, but it was in my mind, like, why do some people who own AAA come up and do well and some people who own AAA do not? And they both said a version of pitch recognition. Dude can see.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that to the eye test, and the numbers obviously back it up. But the eye test, like, he knows the zone.
He knows the zone, and he knows what is a fastball and what is a breaking ball. And can see it fast and see it early. And that can set you up for a much more extended kind of success than a lot of other people. So damn good trade, it seems, right now.
We're going to play you a piece of audio and want to know if this feels like a blast from the past for you, even though it is very, very new. Next on The Score.
The Parkinson Spiegel Show.
Matt Spiegel got on with some takes that were pure gold.
A little too much Parkinson.
Afternoons on The Score.
Fly ball. Left side of the infield. This could do it. DeJong will make the catch. And the White Sox end a six-game losing streak with a 2-1 win over Kansas City. Say it with me. Southside, stand up.
Okay. So we got a situation here. That is the final call from John Schriffen, new White Sox play-by-play voice of game two of the doubleheader.
Nice 2-1 win. It's their third win.
Now,
whether they need it or not.
Say it with me. Southside, stand up.
No.
So that's what I want to know. Because I said after the first win that he called, I liked the final call. I do like that final call. But I did not know that it was going to be the every win final call, because that could be weird if he tries to get you to stand up 46 times this year. I guess some of their wins will be on the road, so he won't do it for road games. But that's an interesting spot. Is that a signature call for every win in a baseball season?
I think so.
Okay.
It seems like the plan.
Is that the plan?
Well,
every home win?
I think Boog says, sing the song before they crank Go Cubs Go.
Yeah.
You know? John Rooney used to say, that's a White Sox winner.
Right, okay. So South Side, stand up.
Why not something like, we will see you tomorrow night? Something like that.
That's Jack Buck, then Joe Buck.
Yeah,
that one's taken.
Damn.
Okay.
How about the Giants win the pennant? The Giants win the pennant.
They're not the Giants.
Oh, that's a good point. Russ Hodges would be upset, too.
Okay. So we're learning something about the guys. We got a home game signature call, South Side stand up. He also seems to have a little hawk in him. This from game one.
Here's the payoff pitch. Oh, Bones, no way. Come on, Blue.
It's a backdoor curveball that doesn't have the plate. But Jordan Baker thought it was good enough.
Bad call. Bad call by the ump.
It was a bad call, sure.
Very angry John Triffin, feeling it.
Come on, Blue.
Come on, Blue.
Identifying with the fans.
Say it with me. Come on, Blue.
Hey, this guy's got to stop. He's got to stop.
Wait, that's say it with me. Come on, Blue. That's you.
Yeah, that, okay, yeah. Okay. You put those together.
But the umpiring is so bad in these games, it's almost predictable. We could say it with him.
Yeah.
You just know when that pitch is leaving the pitcher's hands.
But going after umps is a time-honored tradition. And not just in baseball, but specifically for engaging over-the-top White Sox television broadcasters.
Come on, Blue! You gotta be paping me! What in the hell are you doing? What are you doing, Wagner? You gotta be kidding me! That is so bad, that is absolutely brutal! That is unbelievable! I'll tell you what, they have got to start making guys be accountable. That is totally absurd! That just tells you he has Blue. Here's an umpire in the American League knows nothing about the game of baseball. That's unbelievable.
Man, that was enjoyable, actually. I really enjoyed hearing that.
Come on, Blue!
So,
was there more after that? Was it part of a rant or anything?
Stone got in there. He just gave him the come on, Blue, and then let the analysts get in there.
Well, that is not a strike.
He was outside.
Can't get him. Oh, no. No.
He was safe at third.
No. And another blown call by Hernandez. Come on, Blue.
That was still Angel Hernandez.
He's even worse than ever.
He's still out there terrorizing all of us.
Lawrence threw out a hypothetical when they were talking about the NBA gambling gate.
Yeah, like Angel with John Hernandez, Porter.
Like, Angel Hernandez is so bad, someone could be like, hey, he could be shaving runs here. He's horrendous.
He remains really bad.
He's committed to being horrendous. I think at this point he enjoys it.
That's an interesting angle to take. I'm going to carve out the lane of being the worst.
Well, he's unfireable. He seems to be unfireable because there's all sorts of subtext and lawsuits and racial profiling that's been alleged, like all kinds of stuff that's going on.
I am racially profiling him as the worst umpire in baseball. Totally fine.
I'm legally profiling him.
Horrendous. I mean, do we think this is the plan? Like, is the plan for this to be maybe a little awkward or cringy or different or uncomfortable early, and in 25 years, John Schriffen is the next Hawk? Is that the plan?
I said it when he was hired, that there has been a capacity and a willingness to accept outside the norm play-by-play voices who bring more of a character and more of a unique flavor and sensibility on the South Side, in the Hawk vein, in the Ed Farmer vein, and not that they're similar broadcasters, but a willingness to let somebody be unique and to be explosive.
I don't want everybody to be cookie cutter.
Yeah, there's some validity to that. There's some validity to that. But you really got to know baseball. Like, we knew that Hawk knew at least the version of baseball that he played and that he loved, and what umpiring dynamics were. That came from a very real and experienced place, did it not?
It did. And the whole thing with Schriffen, and this is legit, more people are hearing his calls listening to this show than they are even watching the game. So, like, you're slow-rolling Schriffen out there right now, and a lot of people think this is cringy, homery, insufferable. When they're good, will people be able to stand him?
I don't know.
Because right now you're getting more of him by people listening to our show than watching the games.
That's probably that's true. That's true by the numbers.
By the time they're good, he'll be further along. He'll be further along, and we'll have experienced a lot more, know the game better, know the White Sox better, et cetera. So maybe there's always a capacity to enjoy your broadcast more. You like your homer more, especially when your team's good.
Yeah. Being positive when the team is awful, though, can do a lot to damage credibility.
It's annoying.
Yeah.
It's like he's, or not him, it's like somebody would be calling us stupid. Like, we're not stupid. You don't have to fake this.
Right. I gotta stand up for the fourth win of the season in May.
Third.
Yeah. I'm saying the fourth win.
I don't know if it's coming.
My bad.
It's sort of like closing chances for Michael Kopech. I don't mind him using the call every time they win. I really don't. If that's what you're going to do, go ahead, lean in, enjoy it. Celebrate your wins, and you don't know how many you're going to get. Last night, Bill James was like, just the old baseball historian Bill James was putting out there, you know, these White Sox remind me of the 1951 and 52 Tigers that challenged the Yankees for a while and then fell apart. So I go to Baseball Reference, the 1952 Tigers won 50 games, 50 baseball games, 5-0. Granted, there were only 154, but 104 losses, still a lot. Thanks, Bill.
They challenged the team, though, huh?
Before it all fell apart.
Okay.
Yeah.
When did it fall apart?
These White Sox, man, they did challenge. They won a division. Then it all fell apart.
Yeah, this team is 3-15. Tanny's Open kicks off the 5 o'clock hour. Are Bulls fans so good that it excuses mediocrity? This is a real theory that real people with real thoughts have. I disagree. It's next on The Score.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.